Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Along with Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. Talking.Golf here as we kind of are going to begin the week with Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf because we're in the process of rest and recovery from the Ryder Cup. And Gary got to do it first this week with a little trip up to Northern Michigan, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But Gary, as we record this here on a Sunday night, it's a week ago that the Ryder Cup came to an end at Whistling Straits. And it still kind of, to me, feels like a surreal experience. I mean, a week out, what's your biggest takeaway from the Ryder Cup? And does it feel like a year ago by this point?
You know, Rob, I flashed back to the closing press conference with Team USA. I just, several times this past week, I thought about how cool that was, how much that team really did bond. You know, you talk about bonding and chemistry, and sometimes it's just lip service, but you could just tell in that final news conference that the USA, Team USA guys, those 12 guys, and, you know, and their assistant captains and Steve just really gelled and bonded. And, you know, part of that is winning. Part of that is crushing Europe. You know, maybe they're not having nearly as much fun if they lose, but boy, they sure did seem to have fun, Rob. That's kind of what I've been thinking about this last week or so. How about you?
Well, and I'm thinking about the same thing. I mean, that's kind of our lasting impression of these guys. You know, there had been that, as we mentioned on our final Ryder Cup podcast from Whistling Straits, you know, there had been about a half hour, 45 minutes while the Europeans were in fielding questions from the media in the same little area there just behind the 18th green. You know, that to me will always be the lasting image I have of, you know, these guys who have such a, you know, competitive exterior, 51 weeks out of the year during a Ryder Cup year. And on this particular year, 2021, they let that guard down a little bit. And and what's weird is that, you know, you were in the room. I was back in the media center watching this whole thing unfold on the big screen. And it didn't take me long to realize that, you know, a few of the participants in that news conference had been, I don't want to say overserved, but they were certainly, feeling pretty good at that point. Could you tell, you know, in the same room, I mean, we're talking about a very small area. I mean, it's basically, you know, the size of a bedroom almost that we have the stage and then the 25 spots for the media with microphones. We're not talking one of your typical Ryder Cup, you know, press conference areas. This was a very intimate gathering. Could you tell that it was going to go that direction?
Pretty much when they walked in, Rob. Yeah, they were like high school kids at a party or whatever. I mean, Dustin Johnson, that's as animated as I've ever seen him and as loose and as talkative. I mean, he was funny. I mean, he could have been a comedian up there. And you rarely see that kind of stuff out of Dustin. So I'm sure he had a couple sips of champagne and was feeling pretty good. And, you know, some of the other guys, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Morikawa, they were, they had grins plastered to their face that just wouldn't come off.
Well, and again, we spent the entire week up there Monday through Sunday, late Sunday night. And I guess the other thing that kind of really has lingered to me, Gary, is the fact that when you and I arrived on the grounds on Monday, it felt no different than the Monday of, say, a Greater Milwaukee Open. We knew that we were going to have a chance to talk to the two captains for the longest time, the only one on the grounds that we could see was Colin Morikawa hitting, at the range. And I think it was Joe Stadler who said he was the only guy, because Joe was from the WPGA, the executive director, was kind of in charge of the range that day. And you know, there was, you know, nobody there getting there early. We didn't expect it. The Europeans were going to come in together and the Americans were going to filter in. And eventually they did, all by late afternoon. And that's when, you know, the whole process started. So to go from those humble beginnings in the week when there were no fans on the ground, it felt like, you know, we were at, Brown Deer Park on a regular day, to, the height of all the chaos on Sunday as the Americans are closing out a victorious Ryder Cup in record fashion. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever seen, a point A to point B quite as pronounced as that.
Well, that's what's so cool about the Ryder Cup. It builds to a crescendo. You know, it starts, you start with the practice rounds, and guys are pretty, you know, guarded about what they say. They don't want to say anything that's going to, you know, be bulletin board material in the other team's team room. And then the action starts, and it starts heating up, and all of a sudden you have Bryson DeChambeau laying his putter down with the putter head in the cup to point out that he should have been given a putt. And I mean, stuff, you know, you have the Europeans coming out in their cheese heads before it started, and it sort of builds to that Sunday crescendo of singles. And the drama just builds and builds in that thing until Sunday is just like a free-for-all.
So I think it bodes well for the way the week went that we have so many highlights. Bryson's 417-yard drive on number five. So many of the great clutch shots. Scottie Scheffler's win over John Rahm on Sunday. It just, to me, that all, you know, the common denominator in this all, Gary, is the fact that Whistling Straits as a Ryder Cup venue will probably go down as one of the more successful Ryder Cup venues, to say the least. But it seemed like it was fully equipped to handle the entirety of the event. And we were talking before we came on the podcast, you know, where do you see Whistling Straits going forward as a potential, you know, return? They gave Hazeltine a second one because, you know, I think they gave it to him because everyone was so boisterous and it was a winning Ryder Cup there. Why not go back? But, you know, I wasn't aware until a couple weeks ago that, you know, no one ever went back to another Ryder Cup venue, even when the Americans were winning these things regularly. I mean, this has really been something that's been, you know, farmed around to, you know, every different major championship venue, every different, high profile destination venue, you name it. In some ways, Whistling Straits was just another one in line.
Yeah, you know, Rob, I would love to see the Ryder Cup come back, as we've noted. It's scheduled out in America through 2037 now. And so the next open date would be 2041, 20 years from now. I'll be retired. You might still be slaving away, Rob, but I know I'll be sitting in a rocking chair somewhere. But, without a doubt, it should come back to Whistling Straits, because I thought the course checked every box. Except maybe for it is a tough spectator venue. We have to say that and admit it right out. You know, the grandstands were great, but if you wanted to follow action, it was really tough to follow. But the only thing, you know, what I'd be concerned about, Rob, is I understand that there's some friction between the Kohler company and the PGA of America. I hope it doesn't get between them. That would prevent another Ryder Cup from coming. I know the generators that the PGA brought in to run all the tents, all the corporate hospitality, were not Kohler generators. And I know that was a sticking point with the Kohler company people. There were some other things that happened. So there's some tension there. And hopefully the two sides can work through it, because I don't know about you, Rob, but I'd love to see it come back there someday.
I would too. I think that the setting, you know, and we've talked about it, aside from I'm playing on either the two coasts, and we'll talk about, you know, other potential Ryder Cup venues in a second, you know, to have an inland golf course on a lake that, you know, replicates the seaside effect. And of course the design of the course, you know, and what Pete Dye and Herb Kohler, you know, collaborated on, with, I think, some input from Alice Dye, was really, it checked all the boxes from, being a competitive match play course. They could shorten it, but not make it a par three, executive course. It wasn't like it's a pitch and putt. If you were offline, you paid a stiff price. That part was still part of the dynamic in terms of the course setup. And I just loved it as a Ryder Cup venue. And, being my first Ryder Cup, it really hit home that you can set up a golf course, Gary, for a Ryder Cup and the format of a Ryder Cup in the same way that you can set up the same course for three PGA championships and a U.S. Senior Open in different ways. And I think they learned a lot from the three PGA championships, but it's a totally different experience, but it just says a lot about the course that it can be versatile enough to host either and do it successfully.
Yeah, Rob, I don't remember a single shot from Hazeltine. I mean, I remember obviously Rory's match with a singles match with Patrick Reed.
Right.
That was very memorable. But as far as remembering shots, I don't really remember much. I don't remember any shots from the four previous Ryder Cups I covered. I don't really remember any shots from Medina, but I'll never forget Jordan Spieth's shot on 17, from the side of a cliff.
Yep.
And I'll never forget Bryson DeChambeau's 417-yard drive. And I'll never forget Bryson driving the green on number one.
Right.
And, so those are things that are going to stay with you. And that's the kind of stuff I think that stays with fans too. And spectators, they look at these things and think, my goodness, what, unbelievable golf. And then we saw guys, on the side of mountains and, horrible lies. And on the other hand, a lot of birdies were made by both teams, but especially the Americans. So to your point, great Ryder Cup venue, I think.
And I'll throw in Colin Morikawa's clinching birdie on Sunday on 17,
which
is designed to be a hole that could end a lot of matches without getting to 18. And then if you get to 18, it's pretty much, flip a coin. So I totally support it. Your thoughts on that. Gary, since the Ryder Cup has concluded, a lot of people on social media throwing out, options for future Ryder Cups that might not have been on the radar. A couple people have mentioned the TPC at Scottsdale because of the stadium-like setup, especially around number 16, which would be, late in a match, would be epic. I threw out, I think West Coast golf courses would be great for this kind of thing because of the prime time nature of it. And then you've got Pebble Beach and you've got Torrey Pines, which, both have played host to U.S. Opens. What do you see as maybe the pros and cons to some of those that people are throwing out, and what do we see as maybe the ideal Ryder Cup venue going forward? Has it changed at all from what we saw at Whistling Straits?
Well, it's changed in that, years ago, Rob, the captains didn't have much control over the course setup, and now they do. So I think, in America, you kind of want to go to courses that the captain can manipulate a little bit, like Steve did with Whistling Straits, and certainly like Europe's going to do it in Marco Simone, Rome, in a couple of years. But the two venues I would love to see that never have any tournaments, or at least tournaments that we see on TV, Cypress Point, scene of one of the greatest matches ever played between Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson against the amateurs, Ken Venturi and E. Harvey Ward. Classic book by Mark Frost. And I would love to see something there because we never really get to see Cypress Point and Pine Valley in New Jersey. How cool would that be to have the number one course in the world by acclaim in the various golf magazines host a Ryder Cup? So that'd be on my bucket list. And if we were going to go back to courses, Straits would be number one in my book and maybe Kiawah Island would be number two.
Absolutely. And you need to have some real estate. And you need to avoid, I guess, the one thing that would, they always say that Torrey Pines gets tougher when they shorten the fairways and narrow the fairways, I should say. And, that's obviously the recipe that worked for the Europeans in France a couple of years ago. And, so you'd need to be careful about which courses you choose and how they would potentially allow the captain to do that. Speaking of captains, Steve Stricker taking the Ryder Cup on the road to Camp Randall yesterday is probably the highlight of the Badger game yesterday.
Yeah.
Steve Stricker showing off the Ryder Cup a week after being the successful Ryder Cup captain You were the guy that asked the question of him in the news conference, would you do this again? He emphatically said no, but I think, you know, maybe if we asked him after one more deer season or a few weeks out in the woods, if he'd do it again, we might get a different answer. But then again, I'm not sure he has to be the captain in order to be kind of the, you know, the guy who guides success for Team USA. I think the way the captaincy rotation is set up, you know, he's certainly going to be in the mix as a vice captain with whomever takes the mantle in 2 years. So do you think that that would work, you know, with him being in the room, or does he have to be the head guy to be able to, you know, do the job that he did here at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, there's no doubt, Rob, that, you know, when it's Tiger's turn and Phil's turn and Zach Johnson's turn to be the Ryder Cup captain, they're going to call on Mr. Stricker to be an assistant. And I, you know, he's obviously been an assistant three times and now a captain and a winning captain of a President's Cup team. So he's got certainly a wealth of knowledge, as all those guys do. But as for whether he'd do it again, you know, it's his turn probably wouldn't come up for a while. And then you talk about a guy in his 60s, and is he still close enough, you know, to the players coming up who are in their 20s? But having said that, you know, the guys who played for him this time are going to be on Ryder Cup teams for four or five more, you know, go rounds of the Ryder Cup. So right. He would still be close to those guys. So I wouldn't say never. I think it's probably a long shot, but I know a lot of people would love to see it.
When you and I were in the media room this week looking up victorious Ryder Cup captains, we saw a number of names on that list that, you know, obviously have won multiple times. But the one that stood out the most to me was Arnold Palmer, because there was distance between his captaincies, successful captaincies, stints. And we really haven't, of course, we haven't seen many victorious Ryder Cup teams either on the U.S. side in recent years. But you know, I think that would be something that would be fun to see again, too, would be, you know, some of these, you know, victorious captains that, you know, are given the second chance, but not right away. I mean, you know, see what, you know, the Zach Johnsons and the other up and comers, if Tiger gets back to a point, you know, I would think that he'd be in line after, you know, having captained the President's Cup, you know, a couple of years ago, that if and when healthy, that, you know, he'd be the guy that would be wearing the skipper's cap. But that would be kind of cool, I think, to see a little time elapse and maybe go back to, you know, where, you know, Steve Walken, the number of these guys, six rookies on the way in, you know, let's say four or five of them are still around in about 10 years time, you know, maybe they're on their way out. And wouldn't that be a cool thing for him to be able to captain, you know, in bookend those guys, the Ryder Cup careers for those guys?
Yeah, you know, and by then Steve will be, you know, full-time on the Champions Tour. If he's even still playing, you know, when his turn would come around again, he'd be in his 60s, certainly. So, you know, he might be a ceremonial sort of player by then. I don't think that would be any reason to hold back from naming him captain based on his success and based on his wealth of knowledge and how to do this thing.
Well, that kind of puts a bow on our Ryder Cup coverage. It's been a real, I mean, we spent so long building up to it. And it delivered in every way, shape, and form. And again, like Gary says, it'd be great to be able to see it come back again to the state of Wisconsin one day. But I think even in the Ryder Cups that are played outside of the state of Wisconsin here, everyone that was at Whistling Straits will have a kind of a different perspective on what makes that competition the great event that it is. You're listening to Talking.Golf. We're sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. Long story short, kills the bacteria and fungus that makes you sweat. So it actually smells good. So if you want to learn more, go to ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Our Ryder Cup discussion was part of our What's Up feature, powered by our Instagram page at wiz.golf. We really had Megan Augustine going at all hours with our Ryder Cup photos and the like. And now we've kind of transitioned into high school and college golf. We'll talk about that now here on our What's Next segment, powered by our Twitter results handle at wis.golf live. It is WIAA Girls Golf Sectional Week. And Wisc.Golf Live will be the first place you find results Monday and Tuesday as the results are posted to our site from the, let's see, it's 6 sectionals in Division I, 3 in Division II, Monday and Tuesday. Everybody trying to punch their ticket to the WIA State Tournament a week from Monday at University Ridge in Madison. And of course, we'll continue to showcase college golf results, including next weekend's WIAC Women's Golf Championship at Reedsburg Country Club. But back to reality means back to the fact that it's the first week of October here, Gary D'Amato, and the end of the golf season approaches. As I mentioned at the outset, you got away for some well-deserved R&R on golf courses in northern Michigan. Your insights on fall colors, how close really are we to the end of the golf season? I'd like to think that maybe we're still a month and a half or two out.
Yeah, I think, you know, and certainly in Milwaukee area and southern Wisconsin, Madison, south, we're a ways away from full colors. But this morning, Rob, I was up in the UP, played Sage Run up in Harris, Michigan, at the Island Resort and Casino, close to Escanaba, about 30 miles from Kearney, Michigan, the hometown of one Hunter Eichhorn. But it was probably peak color. I mean, it was just beautiful. It was a real misty morning this morning, a lot of fog. And it never really rained, but the mist never really lifted off the course. So you didn't get the sunshine and the really, really bright fall foliage. But all the trees were red, yellow, and orange, various shades. And I wish we'd had a sunny day because it was spectacular. And the last couple of days, I played a little more downstate in northern Michigan, you know, south of the Mackinac Bridge. And the coloring there was probably maybe 50%. So it's creeping south, Rob. It's not far away.
Well, we hope for everybody's sake that it's going to be a long and prosperous. It kind of feels like a lot of golfers in Wisconsin have kind of gotten the bug again after the Ryder Cup because they saw, 24 of the best golfers in the world on Wisconsin fairways for a full week's time. And, it's like we don't want this year to end. We've looked forward to 2020. We look forward to 2020 for a long time. The Ryder Cup got pushed to 2021, so we got more than we bargained for. So let's hope that it continues to be a long and happy fall golf season for everyone. Speaking of the aforementioned Hunter Eichhorn, Marquette and Wisconsin in action, college golf season still at really going strong, and it will through the end of the month at the Rich Harvest Farms Intercollegiate down in Sugar Grove, Illinois. The round of the day today on Sunday was turned in by Wisconsin, a 283, and with a two-round total of 569, they're just three shots behind Missouri in second place. Griffin Barella, a 69, Cameron Huss, a 68. They are currently tied for third. Coulter Smith, a 71, and then Ryan Smith factoring into the scoring with a 75. And then the Marquette Golden Eagles, after a 282 on Saturday, turned in a 295 on Sunday, led by the Hunter Eichhorn's second straight 69. He is currently tied for the lead. So if you're a college golf fan from Wisconsin, a lot to like about the leaderboard at Rich Harvest Farms, Gary.
Yeah, Rob, Mike Wilson, the first-year coach at Wisconsin, must be pushing some right buttons there to get his guys basically pretty much the same team as last year, except for Graham Moody, maybe, and Ryan Smith is playing some now. But, second place in this thing. And I remember Coach Wilson, when I interviewed him, saying that it's important in every tournament you play in college to beat as many teams as you can. And as you mentioned, Rob, before we got on the podcast, Wisconsin is currently right, ahead of every Big Ten team in this tournament with one round to go. So, kudos to whatever, is being done at Wisconsin. It sounds like they're doing things the right way. And Marquette didn't have as good a day today as the Golden Eagles had yesterday. But, Max Lyons continues to play well. And, of course, Hunter Eichhorn is the cream of the crop, really, in the Big East.
And to Gary's point, Badgers finishing ahead of Purdue, Nebraska, Michigan, and Minnesota. We should mention, too, that Hudson's Bennett Swavely, a 74-71 start. He's currently T24, and as the number five golfer for the Gophers, currently second on their team in the order of things there on that leaderboard. Yesterday, wrapping up down in Normal, Illinois, the CCIW Women's Golf Championship. Carthage College, under head coach Brandy Johnston, wins that. They were 20 strokes behind Illinois Wesleyan after one round on Thursday, and came back with a great round of 293 on Friday and wound up tying Illinois Wesleyan heading into the final round. And then the top three golfers for Illinois Wesleyan on Saturday were a combined 5 under par on the back nine, and they win that one going away, and by about 7 shots, I believe, was the final margin. So they get the conference's automatic berth in the NCAA Division III championships next May. Those will be contested down at the Woodlands outside of Houston. As I mentioned, WI sectional girls golf going on. We'll have the Division I preview posted to the site first thing in the morning. We've got about, I believe, 4 of the 6 sectionals in D1 are on Monday, 2 in Division I on Tuesday, which is when all 3 of the sectionals in Division II are. And the WIAC championship, where Whitewater going for another conference title. I believe this one would be 5 in a row. I think that's called One for the Thumb, if I'm not mistaken. And if you're into rings for your championships, Gary D'Amato, would you, if you won championships, would you go around wearing the rings from your championships? I've never been a big ring guy, so I never really got into the One for the Thumb. That was always a big thing for Badger hockey back when they were the only team winning any type of titles of note.
Yeah, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers actually coined that one way back in the 70s, Rob. But would I wear rings? You bet, Rob. I'd probably carry around the trophies too. Why not, right?
Why not, exactly. So we kind of, you know, we're getting to, you know, along in the tooth here with as regards to the 2021 golf season. Gary, what's your advice to golfers as they're winding down their personal seasons? You know, I think you know, in terms of competitively, I should mention too that we'll talk about it in upcoming episodes of Talking Golf. I had a chance to play Phoenix Country Club on Wednesday. The Charles Schwab Cup Championship Media Day was there. They had Kevin Sutherland come in. He's the defending champion. And it kind of gets pushed to the side until it's the only show going after, you know, I know we have the fall wraparound season on the PGA Tour, but, you know, it won't be long now. Jerry Kelly will be trying to, you know, chase down that Schwab Cup thing. But we've only got a few minutes left in the podcast and a few weeks left in the competitive golf season before we hit the holidays. What are you looking for, you know, to put a bow on the 2021 season here? And what can we do to cap what we've already done here in 2021?
Boy, it'd be a tough encore. But for golfers out there, you know, I have a feeling a lot of golfers, you know, last year was a big year after COVID, after the initial shutdowns, golf courses were crowded. And a lot of people thought maybe that couldn't be sustained. Well, it was sustained and then some this year. You know, everyone I've talked to, Rob, and you've seen it, and we've seen it firsthand. Courses have been just choked, crowded this year. And personally, for me, Rob, I've played more golf this year since heading into my freshman year at UW-Whitewater after my senior year of high school. So this is the most golf I played in, I don't know, that's a lot of years. I can't add them up. I need 6 hands for that, I think, Rob. But yeah, so I think people are still playing golf. And I think as long as the weather holds, we're still going to see a lot of golf courses. They're going to stay open, you know, the public courses that aren't Erin Hills or Whistling Straits that close, you know, relatively early for the season. I think we're going to see courses stay open and golfers continue to flock to them.
Well, and rightly so. I'm right with you. Part of it is because I've moved to a golf course community. So I'm you know, the opportunity to play is greater. But, you know, just looking around, you know, especially when I was back in June, every time I drove by a golf course, I mean, every hole, you know, as far as the eye could see, golf carts, walkers, you know, I mean, there's so much good to be had from around a golf. And you know, we'll also talk about as we wind down the 2021 season, some of the trends and, you know, with the opportunity, if you haven't already, to get out to play the Bass at Black Wolf Run, 12 North up at Trapper's Turn, and then Pioneer Point in Madison, which just opened a couple weeks ago, the, you know, kind of the sister course to Hawks Landing that has the Hain influence and the Jerry Kelly influence in it. And again, it doesn't have to be 18 holes anymore, Gary, for it to be a good time.
No, it doesn't, for sure. And we don't have to have 450 yard par fours either. We can have fun on, you know, courses where the average hole length is 70 or 80 yards, and more and more people are flocking. You know, when I was young, we kind of turned up our noses at par three courses. They weren't regulation. They weren't legitimate. They were for beginners, you know, all that sort of thing. But that has flipped. That script has flipped 100%. And, even accomplished low single digit handicappers are enjoying playing, short courses, and they're popping up all over the place. And now we've got some really good wins in our state, Rob.
Well, and to your point about if you don't think that a hole in one is a big deal for golfers of all ages, one of the great stories from the last week was at the WI Regional at Portage Country Club, where Milan Dahman of Middleton and Lucy Stray of Sun Prairie playing together in a group made back-to-back holes in one on playing in the same group on the 10th hole up there at Portage Country Club. You had a reference to Howie Oakes in a sweet spot column a couple weeks ago, and Howie is the mayor of Portage Country Club. I had a chance to play with him decades ago, and the guy's got a great short game. You have to have a great short game up at Portage Country Club, but if you make back-to-back holes in one, that's one way to not have to rely on your short game to get you through there. That was so that was one of the fun stories to be able to write, but there's still a lot of magic to be made here in 2021, so stay tuned. If it's happening, we'll bring it to you. And we've had a lot to write about so far this year, and we still have a good solid October, November, maybe even a little bit of December to continue to do that. Well, Gary, that brings us to the end of Talking Dot Golf. Thanks so much for your time. Glad you made it back from the Northern Michigan region safe and sound. And we'll do this again next week.
All right, Rob. Great.
For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking Dot Golf, sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So get out there and join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.